It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already the end of May. May 30th, if you're listening to this on Saturday, May 30th, and that runs at 9:05. Memorial Day has come and gone. We got some great weather. Want to give a big shout out to last weekend's guest, Dr. Deb Osgood. We had a great discussion talking about leadership during the COVID crisis, as well as other things we can all do to help all of us that takes a village driving this sort of crisis management. So thank you, Dr. Deb Osgood. Big shout out to you. For my running friends, usually at this point I talk about all the different races, you know, that I ran over Memorial Day weekend or coming up. But, of course, all races due to COVID-19 basically have been either canceled completely or postponed indefinitely. So, my running friends, I hope you are running virtually. There's a number of creative ways that people are dealing with their need to have an adrenaline rush with running. And 3 weeks ago, I had Joe Casper on my show, and Joe was talking about all the virtual, you know, running opportunities there are. So if you go on the nedelta.com website, you'll see the show from a couple weeks ago with Joe Casper, and that'll detail that. So on the subject of wellness and green and forests and things like that, this weekend with me is a good friend of mine, Jack Savage, the president of the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests. Jack, thank you for joining me this weekend. I know you must be crazy busy like we all are. Our lives certainly have changed. We go to less external events and less fundraising events, but we spend more time, unfortunately, doing emails on our computer. So it's kind of a good break for us to talk about the Forest Society. So thank you for joining me this weekend.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us about, you have a long and storied history. Your family has roots in the forest products industry. You're a writer, you're a publisher, you're a certified tree farmer. You also know how to do planning board stuff, et cetera. So tell us, I think it might be good background for people to hear the depth of why you're the perfect fit to be the president of the New Hampshire Forest Society.
Well, I appreciate if people are saying that. We will see whether it, in fact, is true.
It is true.
So perhaps most importantly, I've had the pleasure and privilege of working for the Forest Society since 2005. And through that work, I've come to understand a lot more than I knew before about forest conservation, about forest management itself, and so forth. But as you suggest, I had some familiarity with those topics going back in my family's history and with the management of my own very modest tree farm. One of the reasons that I got into forest conservation in particular, and you sort of referenced it, is that I was very involved and have for a long time been very involved in my community. So that means thinking about what the community wants itself to be. What do you want to look like? What do you want your land base to be? What do you want your housing stock to be, your businesses to be, and that kind of thing. And I came to the conclusion that when it came to natural resources, that if a community wants to make sure that it has adequate natural landscape as part of its mix, it needed to proactively go out and protect it. And it wasn't good enough to rely simply on zoning. You really had to go out and prioritize the lands that were important to protect and do that and then do it. And I got involved early on with the Forest Society through a project in my own town, Middleton, the Moose Mountains Reservation, which in my mind has transformed that town and ultimately will make it, over the years, a prime place to live, work, and play going forward. All because of the foresight to identify, you know, the priority places in that town to protect and going out and doing it.
Awesome. And of course, you you do practice what you preach because you live in a historic farmhouse, correct?
I do, yeah. My wife and I, you know, you live in a historic farmhouse and you say that you're restoring it, and that's a never-ending project.
Sure.
Our kitchen right now is sort of torn up as we scratch our heads and figure out how to get modern appliances into a historic cape and do it in a way that protects the historic character of the home but still provides some of those modern conveniences.
We have so much to talk about, but before we get into a lot of detail, I just want to remind people of your website, which is forestsocietyoneword.org. And tell us about funding. I always get this question, well, how does the, when I feature not-for-profits and other organizations, well, you know, what's the source of their funding and things like that? So, again, the website is forestsocietyoneword.org. And how do you fund the organization so that you can do all these initiatives, because I have a favorite expression, you know, no money, no mission. And I know in your case, there's also a lot of sweat equity, but tell us how maybe the listening audience can help from a funding and volunteer perspective.
Sure. First, I want to say I feel like we've been very fortunate over the last few months. There's a lot of needs out there. There's a lot of nonprofit organizations that are struggling to meet social needs, and there's a lot of people who are out of work, and we've been very fortunate that we've been able to continue working. We've got some strong supporters who have continued to make that happen, and so I think we just feel incredibly lucky that we're able to be in that position. In a typical year, we derive revenue, philanthropic revenue from our members. We have about 10,000 member households, and they're paying dues to become members and get our quarterly magazine and get tickets to Lost River, which we own, and so forth. And then they're also making extraordinary gifts, either to one of our capital campaigns. We're running several right now to protect particular pieces of land around the state, or to donate to our annual fund, and that's a key component of our funding. We also are a business, and we have earned revenue. You know, we run a Christmas tree farm at the Rocks, and that's a good stream of revenue. I hope that we're able to do that this winter. If it isn't, that will be one of the things that we'll have to address, a reduction in those kind of revenues. I mentioned Lost River. That's a popular attraction in the White Mountains that we partner with White Mountains Attractions to run, and we derive a substantial amount of revenue from people, tourists and New Hampshire people alike, who go there and have a beautiful family outing going through the Lost River Gorge. And I think there's no question that we're going to see some losses in that revenue this year, and we'll have to make that up. So we have, and then a key component, and one of the things that distinguishes us from perhaps other land trusts, is that we have always been a forestry organization. We have always seen sustainable forest management as a conservation tool. If you allow a private landowner to derive some revenue from sustainable harvesting of wood products on their land, they're much more likely to keep as a forest, as opposed to needing to carve off 2 acres or 5 acres and convert it permanently to some other use. And we demonstrate that. We own 57,000 acres, 190 different forest reservations, and we have a forestry department that oversees harvests. We work with, in a given year, 10 or 12 consulting foresters to bring wood to market, and that's an important revenue stream for us as well.
I've always been impressed, I call it, the way you all obviously are protecting the environment, but you're also strategically pragmatic, is how I like to put it, and I think that probably comes from all of your various experience, including, you know, being chair of the ZBA. So I congratulate and salute you on that. And before we get into the upcoming event, the Merrimack River documentary film and some other things, you were a board member and past president of the New Hampshire Writers Project. I'm thinking that's helped you in your current position, but what do you think?
Well, I think you probably know. What did you call yourself? The coach of the insurance company,
right.
North Delta Delta.
Right.
It's all about communication.
Yep.
Right? And that's was my job before I became president was VP of Communications and Outreach. And you don't always get it right, but you strive to communicate well, communicate often, and communicate with clarity about what you're about, and engage in problem solving with partners and staff and board members and so forth. And so to the extent that my communications background helps, I'll take it.
Well, it does, and I think it's probably even that much more important. I found in during this COVID-19 messy middle that we're in, it's, you know, it's connecting with your own employees, most of whom are working virtually. In
right.
my case, communicating with 1,900 dentists, 5,000 customers, and so you have your own constituencies in the same way. So, excellent, Jack. So we're going to break for commercial. Just want to remind people that the website is forestsocietyoneword.org. We're always looking for dues-paying membership, so please go on there. And we'll return after commercial break with Jack Savage, who is the president of the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio. This week joining me is the president of the Society for Protection of New Hampshire Forests, Jack Savage. And in the first half of the program, we were talking a lot about Jack's very robust background, which has really well-positioned him to lead this great organization, both in terms of practical knowledge, the fact that his family has roots in the forest products. He practices what he preaches. He lives in an historic farmhouse. He's also pragmatic. He's a certified tree farmer, great communicator, and very deserving to be the fifth president of the Forest Society. So let's talk about something that it was intriguing me, and we'll flip back to some other things as well, but the Merrimack River documentary film, what's that all about?
Sure, yeah. So we have been working with a number of partners up and down the river over the last decade, really, to understand what would it be necessary, what would be the priority projects in order to protect enough forest land in order to protect the drinking water supply that the river represents. And, you know, that's a key component of forests that's important to understand. It's really the forested buffer along water resources, surface water resources, that protects and cleans our water supply. And even though, you know, from Franklin south through New Hampshire and then east through Massachusetts to Newburyport, it's a heavily developed area, there is still the opportunity to protect more land. And, in fact, the Merrimack River has been determined to be one of the most threatened watersheds in the nation because of the prospect for further development in the near future. We've got, you know, between 495 and 993, the transportation corridor is right there. That's what leads to development, and that's what threatens the water resource. If we pave up to the river's edge, the water quality will go down, and it won't be the vital drinking water resource that we need it to be in the future. And so in order to understand that and investigate that, we set out making a documentary about the river. And it follows the journey of early career conservationist, Leah Hart, who has worked for us and now works for the Lakes Region Conservation Trust, as she travels along the river and interviews and talks with people along the way. And we try to look at it from a perspective of not the river solely as a natural resource, or I should say the river is a natural resource in its correct definition, which is a resource put to work for the support of the human population. We derive our lives and livelihood, our quality of life and livelihood, from the Merrimack River here in this valley. And so what do we do, and how is that so, and what do we need to do in order to protect it? So we have interviews with certainly the, you know, like Manchester Water Works and Penichuk Water Works folks, but also with folks from Coca-Cola of New England, who are the largest user of water from Manchester Water Works. And we're all drinking it in soft drinks and Dasani water and other products. And it's all coming from that same watershed. And so understanding how our our economy as well as our aesthetics depend on that river, and what we'll take to protect it is the point of the film. And Leah does a great job. It's wonderful to follow along as she journals her way down the river.
Cool. And I know you have some local, what I call, celebrities like Amanda Gripponi and Steve Dupree, so I think people will definitely want to watch that. And isn't it also part of a larger focus that you have on protecting drinking water in general? And I know we have the farm, the local dairy farmer Morrell.
Morrell, yeah.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, so we try not to think of conservation as simply, you know, one parcel here, one parcel there. It's all about protecting the larger ecological systems that support life. And so you think of it regionally, and you try to prioritize things on a regional basis. And that's our basis for the Merrimack Valley conservation plan. And then statewide, even, you look at why do you conserve land, and there are a variety of compelling reasons. One of them might be wildlife habitat. Another might be the timber resource. Another might be rich farmland soils, and that's much of what the Morrell project we're working on now in Boscawen is about. And then it's about water quality. And so you look at a landscape and you say, if we want to protect enough drinking water resources in order to support the population going forward, what would we need to do? And you identify potential opportunities for doing that. And so that's the documentary, which, by the way, that's going to be on our own homegrown New Hampshire Public Television station.
Nice.
On
July 23rd,
8 o'clock, July 23rd. We're very pleased to partner with them on the broadcast premiere of that. Once we can all gather together in a theater, we're looking forward to sharing it with people and having conversations about what's in it. Who knows when that might be? Maybe it could be this fall. Maybe we'll have to be later, but. In any case,
but we can all see it on July 23rd at 8 o'clock, New Hampshire PBS, like a lot of us are doing these days, huddling with our family. So
right.
that's good. I marked
right.
that date down for sure. So
it's really kind of a great opportunity. We've been working on this film for several years. We were on the verge of getting to the point where it was ready for a big premiere, and then suddenly this COVID-19 thing happened. So with every challenge, there's almost always an opportunity. And in this case, we have, an audience of people who, yes, are huddling with their families in homes. And so maybe we'll give even a wider audience. And we hope to use this in schools. I know you have a lot of connection to New Hampshire school system with your work with the state school board. And so we hope to see this documentary used throughout the state.
Great. And that's what as former chair of the State Board of Ed, these are the types of what I call real-world learning that it's what it's all about. So I congratulate you. Again, the date for everybody is July 23rd, 8 o'clock on New Hampshire PBS. Now, since you mentioned COVID-19, and I kind of cool, we haven't overly dwelled on it because, everybody that has a conversation these days or a Zoom conference, we start off with, I hope everybody's feeling well and you get through all that, and then you talk about all the things that you miss, and then you talk about all the emails you have to do, and then you get into it. So we haven't dwelt on that too much. But the reality is, obviously, we're starting to be let out a little bit. Just for example, starting on May 11th, people could visit dentists for regular visits in New Hampshire up until roughly from March 16th to to May 8th, it was pretty much only emergency. So slowly but surely, the governor's stay-at-home order were being let loose a little bit, not let loose, but strategically. But obviously, that probably has had some effect on your operation. So tell us, what you've done in terms of what's available on trail.
Sure. Yeah. Our staff has been working remotely, and I anticipate that will continue to be the case in the near term. And they have been terrific in just sort of figuring out how they could do their jobs in spite of the fact that they weren't congregating in our Concord headquarters, the Conservation Center. all together at once. And so, you know, we're all sick of Zoom meetings. But they work. They get us. They move us forward, and that's been our watchword: is to keep moving forward and adapt as we need to. So that's kind of how we've been handling it. We now have people out in the field monitoring our easements, and forestry was an essential business right from the start. But we've been very cautious. We have people out in the field, and we want to keep the economy going. We want to keep loggers working. We want to keep truckers working. We want to keep consulting foresters working. And so we're advancing those kind of activities. We're waiting to see what we can do with Lost River. Back in April and early May, we had our staff at the Rocks, including Nigel Manley, planted 2,500 Christmas trees because it takes them 7 years to grow, and we had ordered them, and they needed to get in the ground in April and early May, and so they were out getting that work done, and we had to sort of isolate people. We had to rope off the area they were working so the public wouldn't be wandering through the fields coming up to them, which they were tempted to do at times, but we got it done, and I think it's fair to say that we're getting it done safely so far. We're being very cautious. But we're trying to move forward.
That's awesome. And it's a great partnership. I know we, in terms of the floodplain in Concord, you know, we've Delta Dental's underwritten that, and it's great opportunities for organizations and individual, you know, people to get involved with the Forest Society. And again, the website is forestsocietyoneword.org. What do you do, like Mount Major, a very popular place, if it has it been getting a little crowded?
It has. And I should say that, you know, places like the floodplain you mentioned, that's here in East Concord, right across the river from your headquarters, that's a local, very popular recreation area, place where people walk their dogs. There's also incredibly good wildlife habitat. It's providing its ecological benefit as a floodplain, literally. And that has been popular as well. A lot of people there.
I see when I come into the office. I still come to Concord, although most of us are working virtually. Always see people with their binoculars,
yeah,
and other devices.
So we really appreciate your support, and Merrimack County Savings Bank also helps with that. That's helpful as we maintain that property for public use. Mount Major is a whole different story. I mean, that has become, I have to admit, sort of the Hampton Beach of the Lakes region in the last couple of months. I hesitate to put it that way, but it really is kind of true, where we are seeing mid-season and fall season kinds of crowds at Mount Major, where you're literally talking 500 or more cars, and the parking area there fits 66 cars, and they're parked along Route 11. And the issue is that you now create a situation where it's very difficult to maintain social distancing, and you start to have sanitation issues, and there's been concern, frankly, from some of the local residents, because if you go there and if you survey the parking lot and people park along the roads, as I have personally done, it is more than half of those cars are Massachusetts plates, and so people are concerned that these aren't people who have quarantined. They're perhaps coming up for the day, and Massachusetts is a hot spot, and so there's concern there. So we've tried to address it with some signage. We've tried to be proactive, acknowledging the issue, and our whole point is that you can go outside. We have 190 forest reservations. TNC, the Nature Conservancy, has lands. New Hampshire Audubon has lands. Other local land trusts have lands. There is enough room in New Hampshire for everybody to go for a walk.
I like that. That's a great way to put it.
You know,
we're running short on time, but I just want to thank you for sort of that public service announcement, and do want to mention, the interest of time, that I had a couple people ask me about this, but Jack did mention to me offline that other projects are moving forward, like the Tuckaway Farm in Lee, the Claybrook Forest in Hampton Falls, the Forest Society North rebuilding the Rocks after the February 2019 fire, and the expanding presence of other engagements north of the Notches. All of that, somehow you keep it all going. Again, if people want to become members, it's forestsociety.org. all one word for society. Become a dues-paying member. Jack, thanks for your leadership in this, first of all, in this COVID-19 pandemic, but in this overall, the way you've really led your organization and all your involvement for many years. And you're the perfect leader for it. So thank you very much for all you do for us citizens in New Hampshire.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, too, for your leadership.
Thank you. Again, the website is forestsociety.org.